You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
If you haven't done anything by 55, you're not going to.
Uh-huh.
No one gets their shit together at 56 and a half.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comic book creator and founder of Antarctic Press, Ben Dunn. And now your host. He's not intimidated by warrior nuns because he grew up with a Catholic mom, Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for hanging out as usual. If you like what you hear, tell a friend. Let them know. Rate us on your favorite podcast listening device, whatever you listen to this on, I don't care. Let people know we appreciate you being here. Like I said, guys, with 2025 here, we're making sure to get this show back to weekly for you. So I am excited to be back regularly and still building out the official audio studio ever since the move to Texas. Turns out it's hot here and we need an air conditioner that is quiet enough to not disturb the audio. So we're working on that whole thing. If you haven't heard, and you might be listening to this on one of these shows, we are now officially part of the Madness Entertainment Network. So you can find us on more platforms than just audio and the deesecomedy.com. We are now live streaming on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Rumble, YouTube, all sorts of stuff. So now you can also look at me and watch this and listen because, you know, like I always said, I had a face for radio and a voice for silent movies. So, hey, now you get to see me and look at me. But it's good. We're excited to be here. It's been fun. They've been putting it out and we've got some big plans working with the Madness Network, guys. So, couple quick announcements before we get started with our guest today, though. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, I will be at Bourbon and Branch in Spring Branch, Texas tonight doing stand-up comedy. And tomorrow night I will be at Flower in Flower in Leon Valley area of San Antonio. That's a cool little spot. Yeah, we're going to start doing shows there regularly, so come check that out. And I've got a bunch of other shows coming up. The 420 show at Upstage Comedy Lounge on April 19th. Tickets are going fast to that. Will be a special event at 4:20 p.m. So don't miss that out. That show is going to sell out. And also, Kill Stand number 2 will be available very soon. We are at the printer, so as soon as that hits our happy little hands, you will know and you'll be able to get your copies of that. But that's all the announcements for today, guys. I'm excited to get into it with our guest today. He is a comic book legend, pioneer in independent comics, American manga, and so much more. Please welcome Ben Dunn. Ben, how you doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here, man. I'm excited to talk to you. We got to exchange briefly at the 40th anniversary party you did for Antarctic Press, which, by the way, thanks again. That was just a really, really cool event you guys put on here in San Antonio.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad you liked it. It's just our way of saying thank you to all the fans, readers, and supporters over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to, obviously, I've been a comic book fan for a long time, and I've gone to a lot of events and met or not met a lot of creators in my day, and everyone's just so magnanimous and very, you know, it was just so easy and like, oh, why isn't it like this more often, you know?
Well, yeah, I often ask myself the same question, you know, but like I say, it was just one of those things. We figure, wow, you know, we never thought we'd get this far. We might as well have a little celebration and, you know, pay homage to the people who also kept us in business. All our creators, all our fans, all our readers, all our supporters. You know, we're not the biggest comic book company in the world, but we are still around. Yeah, we can say that at least.
I mean, especially surviving the ups and downs you guys have. I mean, you made it through the 90s, which was a rough, rough time. There's some bumps. Yeah.
That and the black and white bust of the 80s and the, and just all sorts of things. If there's any disaster that would befell the comic industry, it probably experienced it.
Yeah.
That's what makes us tougher, you know?
Yeah. I mean, really, you say you survived 40 years. That's nothing to scoff at. I mean, how many comic book companies have come and gone then? And even comic book companies that had, pretty good foothold in the market. You look at things like, CrossGen and stuff like that, which was like real hot for a while in the early 2000s or whatever. And then just kind of, or late 90s, and then just gone,
Yeah, we've seen them come and go. We've seen companies come in with huge amount of capital behind them, and yet they can't seem to sustain any prolonged period of maintaining their business, But I mean, it's the thing is, comics is easy to get into, but very hard to sustain.
Yeah, it's especially these days. It's a shrinking market and very fickle market, the way it changes so quickly and not the way people consume it.
I disagree with that. I don't think it's a shrinking market. I think it's an evolving, changing market. People are still reading comics.
Yeah.
It's just they're not buying them in paper format.
Sure.
I think a lot of people are reading comics in the digital, because we live in a digital world now.
Yeah.
And I bet if you were to do account of people who actually read comics, on a digital way, or just read comics, I bet they're in the millions.
Yeah.
It's just that it's hard to get them to actually get them to pay for it.
Sure. That's the hardest part for
me. It's always been the big bugaboo of the comic industry.
Yeah. If you give it to them for free, you're more likely to read it. I guess that's a good question. Do you think that there is really like a growing younger readership? I mean, maybe I feel like a lot of it for manga and things like that, but like American comics, it seems like that demo is dying off faster than it's repopulating,
No, I disagree. I think that, if you look, the problem is that the American superhero comics are slowly disappearing because they're not interesting anymore. No one wants to read them. And the thing about it, it's just like any other entertainment industry, it's all about the content. Now granted, the problem is that it's not the people who want to read it, it's people want to be entertained, especially in our society. I mean, if we were trying to struggle to find food and shelter and keeping predatory animals away, that'd be one thing, but we live in a very comfortable society. We have lots of time on our hands.
One might say
we want to be entertained. There's no question that people, if they're bored, they want to get entertained, because the last thing people want to be is bored. The thing is that I honestly don't believe the comic industry in of itself is dying. I think it's actually thriving. Manga is proof of that. Dogman is proof of that. The trouble is that the big two companies who have dominated the industry for so long are finally feeling the heat from competition.
Yeah.
Competition from smaller publishers, competition from people who can crowdfund comics with no longer having to deal with gatekeeping from the big publishers, competition from people with just different visions. Plus their own hubris of thinking that their comic books will be bought, by people regardless of what they publish.
Yeah.
They're learning, I think, very quickly that that's no longer the case. No one really cares about, it used to be, you cared about the characters because they were well written and well, designed, and they were produced in a way to get people to want to continue reading their adventures. But now there's no such incentive to do that anymore. They're owned by huge corporations, which in of itself is not a bad thing, but unfortunately it means that they have no incentive to create things that will keep them competitive.
Yeah.
Because they have an endless stream of money from their corporate, you know, owners, so they don't have to worry about, you know, not producing something that people won't buy. You know, they'll just look at it as a loss leader, you know, just so they can keep their IPs relevant, you know, and out of the public domain. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it just becomes like an IP in their portfolio that they don't look at as like a, no, there's no artistic or creative integrity in it. You know, they just, it's just another market share. And like you said, I feel, I always make the joke that like, the publishing arm of Marvel is just a lost leader so they can sell lunchboxes and action figures, you know? Like they, you know, so they can, I mean, even Tom Brevoort recently kind of admitted that it's just kind of an IP house for the films now, which actually is where they can make some money, you know?
Yeah, and plus they're no longer innovating. I mean, the thing about it is that what was the last major new character, you know, that some, that they've created that has just hit the zeitgeist? It used to be, you know, when I was growing up, they would try to introduce a new character every year, yeah, every couple of months, you know, introducing new characters. The problem is that the creators have no more incentive to create something new, fresh, and original because they'll lose the rights to those characters.
Right.
And then why should I give up a potentially $1 billion character to a company, you know, where they won't even pay me my health insurance or, you know, a page rate that's next to nothing, you know, and they make millions and potentially billions off a character that I created that I don't see any benefit from. So, you know, creators no longer have that incentive unless they change the way they, unless they change the way that they treat their creators as far as their creations are concerned. That's why they're doing so many variations of the same character.
All derivative stuff.
All derivatives of the same character. Nothing is new. Nothing different. What was the last major character that they've introduced that has really hit, you know, popular zeitgeist?
Well, you look at like Miles Morales or Spider-Gwen, but they're derivatives also.
Derivatives, yeah. Exactly. If you tried to sell those characters without Spider-Man, how successful do you think they would have been?
Yeah, not at all. Definitely not. I mean, the last thing Marvel did was maybe like Deadpool, maybe was like the last thing that was really original, you know? And even then,
was in the 80s. Yeah, late, early 90s.
You can even argue Deadpool's derivative in a sense, you know? But I mean, depending on how you look at it.
Don't say that in front of Rob.
I don't deny it. Yeah, luckily I don't think he listens to the show. Although maybe, he probably scours the internet for like anything that mentions Deadpool.
Oh, well, that's the thing about comic book. Yeah, every single comic book creator has borrowed from another comic book creator.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just a given, you know, and it used to be acceptable to do that. You know, we just, you know, if somebody saw Superman was a big success, you're going to be 20 copies of Superman.
Yeah, Amazing Man. Nobody remembers Amazing Man, but he was right there after Superman.
Well, Captain Marvel is a good example of that. He their own take of Superman.
Yeah.
You know, and it got to the point where they were outselling Superman.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, they had to nip that in the bud. So they sued him, and at first they won, the Captain Marvel won, but they kept at it, and it got reversed, you know, and then DC just got fed up, and since they had more money, they just went ahead and bought it.
They just bought him. Yeah. Yeah, it is really crazy, you know. It's unfortunate, and you know, you did say something interesting where, like, the indie scene is, with the advent of the internet and that type of thing, where you can go direct to consumer, which, you know, I know Antarctic Press has taken advantage of that a lot. You can kind of cut out the middleman in a sense. And you can supply directly to your fans. I know you guys, I don't know where things stand now with the whole Diamond thing now, but I mean, I know you guys were at least had some distribution and stuff like that. So, I mean, you have that option, but it's a,
yeah.
You also, people who want you are just going to come directly to you.
Well, that is a revenue avenue that you can take. There's no reason why you can't take as many avenue generators as you can. If we can continue to maintain our presence in comic book stores, we will continue to do that.
Yeah.
We're not going to abandon it, you know. We love our comic book retailers. You know, we feel that they're important, you know, in getting things out there and to serve the general public, you know, and it's a good meeting place where people can go and share ideas and be inspired. But there's also the advantage of direct to consumer. Like you said, there's no middleman. We don't have to worry about discounts or having to be paid by, you know, a third party supplier and things like that. So we and, you know, people can get what they want without the hassle of having to go through a comic book store. But, you know, both sides have their pluses and minuses, and there's no reason why we can't take advantage of all venues. Like, we do digital as well. You know, we feel like that that's, you know, like I always said, this is the way we used to treat it was like we treat the comic book stores like a first-run movie house. In fact, there's a lot of parallels between the movie industry and the comic industry. You know, like we treat the comic book stores as first-run movie house. We get the comics out there first. Then we do Kickstarter funding, and that's sort of like streaming. You know, you do, it's direct to the consumer. They pick what they want, and they pay for it. And then after that, we go to digital, which is sort of like cable, you know, where you just put it on there, and people can access it anytime. Now, they don't get any physical thing, but they at least can read it.
Yeah,
you know, and at a very, very low, reasonable price usually.
Yeah,
you know, the only problem is with digital is that you don't own it. You know, unless you can download it and save it on your computer, you know, or on your phone, they can at any time, you know, withdraw, and they have done it. So there's precedence, you know, for it. But for us, you know, we send out PDFs to people so they have the ownership of them and they can keep it forever.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one incentive that we have over, you know, being able to just watch it on some sort of web, you know, website or something else like that.
Yeah, some app you have to resubscribe to every year or something like that. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like so. I said, it's never been about the number of people. It's always been about content.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people don't want to admit that what they're producing may not resonate with a large number of people.
Yeah.
You know, in which case they'll have to either pivot, you know, or they can just continue to do what they're hoping, just be sad. If they're satisfied with the number of readers they have, then that's fine. You know, but if you find that your product is not selling, then you need to change your product.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's such a diverse market. It's, you know, the genres and things you can do in comic books now is opened up. The aperture is just opened up to almost unlimited now, where, you know, it used to be, you know, comic superheroes was the dominant, and it still is, but that is shrinking a little bit as the boutique stories or like the best stories are told in other genres in comic books, you know. And I think that's been the most exciting thing, is you start to see that, oh, people are starting to realize, like, oh, it's not spandex and capes. Like, you can tell any story in comic books.
Yes. I mean, just like manga, you know, the reason manga is so popular is because they're not limited to one genre. Manga is a art form in of itself.
Yeah.
You know, and that you can basically take any subject and make it into a comic book, you know, or a manga. Because they treat the subject material differently than Western comics tend to do.
Yeah.
You know, we try to instill, you know, the people who are writing about a certain subject, chances are they know very little about that subject. But in manga, it's expected that any manga creator who are writing about a certain subject know about that subject.
Right.
You know, and they have to present it as a very knowledgeable, you know, and that to be as very accurate as possible. But, you know, also because they're entertaining. You know, that's why comics are not doing well, because they're not entertaining.
Yeah.
They're not fun to read. You know, they're not, they seem I don't remember the last storyline in a comic book that made me feel like I really want to talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, want to share with other people. You know, I mean, there's a lot of events that are going out, but they all seem to be basically rehashing the same stories over and over again without much originality, you know, and not any stakes, you know, because it just seems very repetitive and seems like by the numbers, you know. I'm not saying that that's the case for all of them, but it seems like the reason why Western comics seem to be on the downslide is because they're not entertaining.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I don't think you're talking out of school when you say that. I think that's very spot on. It's. I mean, I know a long time, obviously, reading comic books for 35 years. And, you know, I more recently just became more discerning where I was reading stuff, you know, just out of habit. Every month I pick it up and I realize, oh, I haven't liked this book for 2 years. Why am I still reading this? You know, like I'm waiting for it to, it's like a drug addict. You know, you're waiting for that hit of the original to come back and get a dopamine hit of what it once was. And then realizing like, oh, I'm not going to get that again. It's just not.
Yeah,
that
I
anymore.
Mean, a lot of long time Marvel and DC here, I sort of think like a battered wife syndrome, yeah. Like, you know, oh, he'll change. He'll get better. I can make him better. You know, it's, and then it's come to the point where you got to file papers for divorce.
Yeah.
I mean, people just, you know, a lot of fans just are not willing to do that because they just want to keep their collection going, or, you know, they want to continue supporting it, or they just, I mean, who knows what the reasoning is. But we are seeing a change in attitude toward yeah. comics. No longer do I see, it may not happen immediately, but, you know, as Marvel and DC become less and less, you know, influential in the comics. Don't get me wrong. They're still powerful.
Oh, right.
You
know? Yeah.
You should never underestimate them because they are. And should they ever get their act together and decide, you know what, maybe we should start going back and making, you know, comics fun and entertaining again, then they can easily turn this industry around.
Oh, yeah. They can pivot quickly. Hard.
You know? I mean, exactly. So the biggest issue I would see is that keeping talent and convincing them to create something new and original, you know, for their company. And I just don't see that happening as long as they keep with their current creator policies that they have in place. They have to do revenue sharing. They have to do, you know, make sure they get creators the proper credit they're due, you know, and that they pay, you know, in accordance to the size of their company, you know,
yeah.
what they can do in order to maintain, you know, and retain, you know, top talent to keep their company afloat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at this point, I don't even, you know, as far as artistically speaking, I don't know how much top talent is hanging around at a lot of those places, you know, like you see a lot of big names that just aren't working anymore. That just like, you know, they do covers, which I get is a lot of money potentially, but you know, there's
prestige. You know, they want the prestige of being able to say that they worked on a particular IP that is very well known to a huge number of people.
Yeah.
You know, plus they can parlay that into something, you know, later on that maybe they'll, you know, develop a fan base that will follow them should they decide to ever leave.
Yeah.
You know, and plus if they still use or if they still create original artwork, they can sell that, you know, for large amounts of money because it features characters that are very yeah. popular.
Well, and if anyone's, yeah, with that though, so many people are doing all digital now that there is no original art to sell either. You know, you just mm-hmm. have like a tablet of stuff. Yeah. So
that is true, you know, yeah. but I think for the most part, I think as I'm not sure, but as far as Marvel and DC are concerned, I still think that most creators still use traditional art methods only because of the advantage of being able to sell it.
Yeah, you know, I would hope so. I mean, yeah, that would. Do you think there's any, you know, I've often thought that part of the reason Marvel does not allow an artist to kind of rise to superstardom anymore is because they're so afraid of like an image 2.0, like, you know, where the artist getting too much power and clout, you know?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. The thing is that writers have less of the opportunity to do that, you
yeah.
know, because you have to be a tremendously talented writer in order to do that. And even then, I don't think they would get together to form another company.
Yeah.
You know, they would just basically just go out on their own, you know, and work their way into other mediums that pay better,
yeah.
give them more exposure. You know, yes, I mean, there's no question that Image basically destroyed the artist as a superstar narrative, you know, because if they make any artist a superstar, you know, they're afraid that they're going to abandon them, you know, at the first sign of being able to do so.
Yeah.
You know, so they want to keep them, they want to keep them on the plantation, basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I mean, it's 100%. I mean, you more and more you hear all these people coming out and being like, I'm getting maybe the equivalent of minimum wage for doing page rates for these companies. So, which is hard, you know. I get they gotta produce money, but also, man, you want these creators to be able to make a living. So,
well, I mean, I mean, the fact of the matter is, I'm also a publisher, so I have a unique perspective in that sure. aspect as well. You know, the thing about it is that a company like ours, we certainly can't afford page rates, you know, because we just don't have that kind of reach and don't have those kind of sales, you know. And also, since we are a creator owned company, with nothing that we publish except for stuff that we create, you know, from whole cloth, is owned by us.
Yeah.
So a creator can come in and say his creation can survive or thrive based on his own creation and how well it sells. Now, you know, I understand that you know, the page rate that Marvel and DC, you know, is not, you know, from what I understand, not a livable, you know, amount. Now, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but my understanding is that a lot of people are complaining about how much they pay. Now, not that I don't want to, not that, you know, I don't have anything against that. So the thing is that all these people are adults and they all sign contracts, you know, and unless they don't read the contract, you really don't have a right to complain about how much they pay you.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, if you don't read your contract and you don't see how much, you know, you should be able to do the math and say, oh, this is not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of creators go in to, especially at the beginning time, is they want the prestige.
Yeah.
You know, they want the bragging rights to be able to say that I worked for Marvel and DC and worked on Spider-Man or Fantastic Four or X-Men or whatever, what have you, you know. And so they're hoping to parlay that into something much greater later on. But the thing is that Marvel doesn't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about your future plans. They don't care about, you know, who you are as a person. They really don't.
Yeah.
You know, all they care about is, can you get your work in on time, and you know, whether or not your stuff sells.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're a corporation. That's all they're set up to do.
Yeah, they have shareholders, and, you know, publicly traded. They've got it's a whole different beast. Yeah, I mean, it's really, really just so much more complicated. It does kill the creative spirit quite a bit, but it's, you know, that's kind of part of it.
Well, so. The thing is, it does and it doesn't. I mean, when you're young, and you want to prove yourself, you know, you're going to do anything. You're going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
To make a name for yourself, you know, and if you get an opportunity to work for Marvel and DC to make a name for yourself, you're going to take that chance.
Yeah,
no matter what, no matter what they pay, you know, a lot of them would pay for, would work for free.
Yeah.
If they were given that opportunity, if Marvel and DC were to say, yeah, tell you what, we're going to do your first book on spec.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, if your book sells really well, you're going to make some money. If you're not, well, yeah, you're not going to do, but I'll tell you what, you know, if you keep at it, you know, maybe you'll work your way up to, you know, a big level. And then there you can make your, you know, but they don't do that. They know by paying a page rate, they're paying you basically a salary. They're basically giving you, it's a contract work. So anything you create, you know, belongs to them. You know, it's just like any, like you hire a plumber. A plumber doesn't come in, fix your plumbing, and then say, I now own those pipes.
Yeah.
You know, they do that. You know?
Yeah.
The when they hire creators, you know, you have to read the contract and say, you know, if there's a provision, you can add a provision in there and say, any new character I create, you know, belongs to me. You know, and Marvel and DC can decide yes or no.
Right, right. Know? There is.
That's the thing. You have, you know, it's not. You know, you cannot argue or complain if you sign a contract knowing exactly what you're getting into.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point, Ben, because, like, for instance, like Walmart, it's really easy to hire someone who can be a greeter at Walmart. That's a pretty, there's not a lot of like, it's a low barrier to entry, right? So I do stand-up comedy for a living. That's how I pay my mortgage. I've been doing it for 17 years. And like, I did stand-up comedy for free for years. I mean, you know, or, and then when you start getting paid, it's like, yeah, I'm going to drive 5 hours to do 7 minutes and I get paid in a hot dog and a beer token. Like, you know, and like, I did that because I wanted to be at this point where I am now, where I can choose where I go, I can get paid what I feel I should get paid, and I can make a living at it, you know? But it wasn't like you just get to show up and be like, all right, well, I just make a living at this now because I tell yuck yucks, so let's go. So, you know, when you say that a lot of people would do that for free, there is something to that, and it's kind of... also lends itself to the indie scene where people are doing it for free or sometimes at their own cost for X amount of time until they create a product or have it sustainable enough in their own base.
Or you're discovered by the general. Now, the thing about it is that
also, you know, yeah.
In the entertainment, see, the entertainment industry is so different than all other, you know, businesses at large. You know, when you're in any other business, you're expected to get a paycheck or you negotiate a salary or something else like that, you know, and the company is expected to pay you, you know, based on that or your performance.
Right.
You know, the thing about the entertainment industry is, first of all, it is a low barrier. Okay. Anybody with an idea, especially in comics, you know, and the ability to express that can do so with very, very, very little, initial, you know, barriers to get into. You don't have to interview with anybody. You don't have to, you can just say, hey, I'm going to do my comic book today.
Yeah.
And you can just start doing it, you know, and there are ways of getting it out. The problem is that there's a huge amount of competition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And everybody thinks that they can do the next Superman, the next Batman, the next Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And, you know, my idea is going to be the one that changes the world, you know. And while that's a lofty goal, and, you know, there's certainly, you are certainly able to do that because, you know, we live in a society where we can do that. You know, the public is the one that ultimately judges your success and failure.
Right.
You know, if your product is good and it resonates with people, they will give you money, or they will give you money in exchange for that product. You know, if your product is not resonating with people, they won't buy it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the problem, is that the trouble is where you come in, is that you have to invest your time, your energy, and your effort. And that takes money. You know, and that takes time, and time is money, you know. And if you lose, if you can't convince enough people to pay for your product, then it's a failure.
Yeah.
You know, you either have to rejigger it so that you can find a, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, the very second superhero comic Marvel ever did was The Incredible Hulk. Right over the Fantastic Four, and that was a huge failure.
Yeah, six issues, you know?
Issues it lasted. Nobody cared about it, you know. But the thing about it is, they believed in the character. They remade it into something that was a little bit more. They made him guest stars. They made him crossovers until finally he got his own book again and became very popular. You know, because they reconfigured who the whole character was supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. There's a lot of creators out there who think that their idea is the best idea in the world, you know, and that they don't understand why, you know, people are not beating a path to their door to support it, you know, when in reality they should just look in themselves and say, well, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
What was it about this thing that didn't resonate with people? You know, what can I do? What can I do to create something that will resonate with people?
Yeah, I think a lot of the times, as a creator who's, you know, written a lot of stuff over my life, I've worked in some TV, film, written books, comedy, did comic books now. It's like, I think the problem is that people write something that they want to be popular and famous. Where I'm like, if you write from what you love and believe in, people are going to connect with it more because it's genuine. You know, if you're writing with this like desperation of I need this thing to be famous and popular, then you're not really writing anything that's true, resonant art. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is that it's one thing to people can recognize if it's something that's created just simply, you know, to get your money.
Yeah.
You know, if you notice, the things that are always very popular are things that resonate with people mm-hmm. on an internal level.
Right.
You know, I can identify with this character. I can identify with this situation. I can identify the way the story is told. You know, I can, it speaks to me on a personal level. And that's what people really want. They want to be entertained on a personal level. They want to be able to, you know, say, oh, well, that, you know, that was fun, or that taught me something, you know, or that's me, you know, in that situation. And that's where, you know, that's where I think that, you know, Marvel and DC are fail. I mean, you know, they probably do have readers for the material that they do that, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
You know, and then by abandoning their core readership, you know, then they're what are they? You know, and that's the big problem you know, that I see that they're having. If they were really genuine about wanting to create a new, you know, readership, they would create an all new line of material of characters that appeal to that readership.
Yeah,
they would instead of taking established characters and trying to put a square, you know, a square block in a round mold.
Yeah,
you know, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I agree with you 100%. So, well, let's transition real quickly, because I want to get to this before we still have time. We've talked a lot about other stuff. I want to talk about you. Let's talk about you for a bit in your journey to what you've done. Because, I mean, you've done some pretty amazing things in your career and pretty innovative. You're born in Taiwan. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
What age did you come over to America?
I came when I was less than a year old.
Oh, so you were right. Okay. I thought so, but I wasn't sure. So, what was your, I guess, path to comic books? You know, I don't mean creating comic books. I mean, like, finding comic books for you is a love.
Well, you know, when living in the United States is a lot different than living in other countries. You know, first of all, we have a lot of freedoms and, you know, opportunities here that you cannot get in other countries. And that's why, you know, I love this country so much, because the opportunities that. But anyway, my father was a voracious reader, you know, and he emphasized that we read too as well. So we had the newspaper delivered to us every day, mm-hmm. so that because this was before the internet and people got their news in the newspaper, you know. But I didn't care. What are all these words? But there was a comic section in newspapers that I would devour. Okay, mm-hmm. And I became a voracious comic reader in the news every day. The first thing I would do is, and to my father's great dismay, I would always go through and take out the comic section and start reading it right away, you know. And that got me to start drawing, you know, copying the comics in the comic section, you know. And that led to me reading comics, you know, because I would go, I mean, when I was going to school with my friends, they would bring comics to school, mm-hmm. you know. We would actually talk about them, we'd trade them, you know. And that's got me to wanting to start reading comics more, and I really started getting into the characters, you know. First of all, it was a simpler time, 60s and 70s and the 80s. There was not a lot kids had to make their own entertainment.
Yeah.
And comics were a way of doing that. You know, first of all, comics were readily available. They were everywhere. You can go to any store, practically any store, and there were comics. Comics were cheap, you know, 25, 30, 35 cents. You know, with a dollar, usually a dollar allowance, you could buy 2, 3, 4 comics.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little change left over. And so that allowed me to start buying, collecting comics that I really were interested in. And then, yeah, I started hanging around with other friends of mine who were also comic book collectors. We would trade. We would talk about the latest storyline. We would talk about the newest artists, you know, things, you know, news characters and things like that. And that's where my love for comics started to build. And then when I went to Taiwan, in the 70s, I discovered manga, and that was a whole different thing altogether, because I was brought up to believe that all comics in the whole world were the same as American comics.
Well, America wants you to believe America's everywhere, right? It's the best everywhere.
Everywhere comics were exactly the same as American comics. So when I went to Taiwan and I saw manga for the first time, I was flabbergasted, you know, by how different it was. You know, how the what kind of subject matter. They were no American comics. It was about giant robots. They had superheroes, but they were of a different kind, a bent, you know, and the art style was different. It was in black and white. You know, I'd never seen anything like that before. And so when I came back, I became a big manga fan and started to promote manga wherever I could. And when I started Antarctic Press, I decided to go the manga route because nobody else was doing it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I always believed in, if you want to succeed, if you want to stand out in comics, do something nobody else is doing.
Yeah.
You know, serve a constituent that no one else is being served. I mean, Marvel isn't going to do steampunk. Marvel isn't going to do furry comics. I mean, they did at one time, you know, but they don't do it anymore. So you can ease, and there are people who want to read that.
Yeah,
maybe they're not millions of people, but there's enough that could, you know, will buy it and sustain it, you know, to keep you in business. You know, and that's what we're really good at. We are good at finding, you know, little niche areas that aren't being served, and try to fill that niche, you know, so that they can have some alternative.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so funny to think, especially back then, you know, for you guys to just decide like, hey, we're going to do manga and we're going to create this imprint. I mean, what did that look like in the early days of Antarctic Press when you first decided we're going to do this, and the infrastructure of making that happen in distributing it? Like, I assume you locally, and then, you know, when it starts moving to the next level, what did that growth look like for you guys?
Oh, well, it was a big, huge learning curve for sure. it's one thing, I mean, this is in the mid 80s. So it's one thing to say you're going to do a comic. It's another thing to actually produce it. Because right now, back then, there weren't a lot of printers who could do comics.
Yeah,
you
sure.
know, at least proper comics. And especially in San Antonio, you know, I had to find, you know, three separate printers to do three separate jobs. You know, I had one printer to do the interiors, one printer to do the cover, one printer to do the trimming and the binding. You know,
wow.
So I had to physically go to each location, pick up.
Wow.
And my car was, you should have seen it filled with, you know, huge pallets of comics.
Yeah.
That, you know, and then so, but it was, you know, eventually found, you know, printers who could do comics correctly, you know, and then there was a local comic book publisher or printer here called Brenner Printing who did comics. In fact, they, at one time, I think they were doing almost like 30% or 40% of all the independent comics.
Oh, wow.
In the country. Yeah. You know, they were very, very big. And we used to go to the print shop when we dropped off our files to be printed, you know, dropped off the artwork to be printed. And we would see huge pallets and boxes of other people's comics just sitting there.
Dang. Just waiting to go out.
A lot of times we would just pick up some free samples just lying on the ground.
Yeah, sneak preview of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I never heard of this.
Take a look at our competition.
At what moment did you decide, like, we're going to do this? And what was the project that, like, was the impetus of it all for you?
Oh, well, yeah, from the very get-go, I wanted to do a manga-style
comic
book. Because it was just, you know, first of all, I thought it was my current passion at the time.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a lot of competition. You know, there wasn't no manga was new. But I knew it was growing. People were discovering it, you know, and plus it was just something I just wanted to do. It was just one of those things I wanted to do. So that was the direction I took it. And because I figured if you're trying to do a comic to try to compete with Marvel and DC, that's a suicide pact.
Yeah.
You know, you'll never bring them down. You can say you can do it, you know, and many people have tried. You know, and just like in Dune, they've tried and they failed.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, they're just Marvel and DC. They've been doing superhero comics for what, 80 years? So they know, and plus they have huge amounts of financial backing. So there's just no way anybody could take them down doing just simply superhero comics.
Yeah.
You know, so my logic was that there was no point, even though I loved Marvel and DC, don't get me wrong. I figured there was no point in competing directly with them because we would lose.
Right.
You know, so we decided to go ahead and create something that was being ill-served, you know, and had the potential of growing. And that's what we wanted. We wanted growth potential.
Yeah. You know? So at what point along the journey did you realize, like, oh, this is actually, like, working? And then at what point did you realize, oh, this is actually my career, and was able to, you know, not, I assume whatever your other, I don't know what your job was before you started doing that, but.
I've tried several jobs, and, you know, I was in college at the time, and I left college to pursue publishing as full time because I wasn't enjoying myself, and it was costing me an arm and a leg.
If you're gonna, you might as well invest that money into something you love.
You might as well make money instead of spending money. You know, so I knew it was a career changer because of sales of the first issue we did, our little black and white comic. I mean, we sold 5,000 copies.
Wow.
You know, and that was a lot, you know, at least to me it was, you know. And then and of course, this was a time when we had, you know, 7 or 8 comic book distributors, and there was like 4 or 5,000 comic book stores. So it was a fairly healthy growing market. Mm-hmm. And so it was good, and we were doing well. We really hit it off when Ninja High School came out. That really took off, you know, and that really cemented our place in the comic book industry, you know. And then we got, you know, Gold Digger, that really helped us out too, you know, because Fred Perry, one of our best creators, who's been with us, you know, from the beginning, we focused on getting as many comics as we could, because the survivability of a comic book company is only as good as how much product you can get out in a particular time period. If you stop publishing comics, you know, it's the problem with a lot of these new publishers is they don't have a long-term plan. You know, they think that they'll do, they can live on 1 or 2 comics every quarter, and you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to put out it. A comic book company is like a shark. It has to constantly be swimming, you know, otherwise it'll die. You know, and it's the same with the comic book. You have to constantly be putting out comics no matter what, you know, so that you can maintain your cash flow, maintain relevance on the comic shop shelves, and keep you in people's minds, because, you know, what the old saying is, out of sight, out of mind. If your books are not on the shelves, they're going to forget you very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reason Marvel and DC have survived for so long is because they put out product every single week.
Yep. And lots of it. Yeah. Lots of it. So
lots of it.
Was there ever a time along the journey where, you know, after success, where you kind of were like, oh, this maybe isn't working anymore? Were there times, or was it always kind of like, I mean, obviously there's leaner and there's better times, but was there ever a moment where you're like, maybe this isn't working anymore?
Oh yeah, there was some, you know, my darkest period was probably during the early 2000s, when I first got married and had a lot of responsibilities, you know, and I had moved away from San Antonio for the first time, you know, and so I was away from Antarctic Press and started my own, you know, company, since I couldn't be there. This was before, you know, internet Zoom was a thing, you know, so it was difficult to maintain any type of connection. So, we were living way beyond our means, you know, and we had to make some sacrifices. So that was one of the things that was, you know, plus Diamond instituted a minimum order policy, you know, that's kind of ironic now, but anyway.
Yeah. How'd that work out for him?
They wanted, if the book didn't sell a certain number of copies, they would cancel it. You know, and Ninja High School just barely met that threshold. We didn't meet that threshold, so we had to cancel the book, you know, and that was devastating to me, you know, because I wanted to keep it going, you know, and then I had to sell the rights to Warrior Nun to somebody else in order to, you know, raise capital for medical expenses and stuff. So that was pretty, but, you know, and all through that, I still maintained my ability to, you know, write and draw comics. I've pivoted to doing things like selling stuff on eBay. And then when I discovered Kickstarter, I was able to start making money that way.
Yeah.
You know, so this, that helped me out. And then once, you know, we were able to connect, you know, using Zoom and the internet and email and stuff like that, I went back to AP and then started handling a lot of their books again. And that helped us out. Now, you know, now I moved back to San Antonio and now I'm directly involved in the day-to-day operations of Antarctic Press, and we are now poised to, you know, really evolve and change with the new changing environment, new changing business, and hopefully keep us afloat and keep us relevant.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, not to say that you guys were gone, but it seems like in the last year, I've seen quite a resurgence of, like, I see it more often in places. I see it more often online. And maybe that's because I live in San Antonio now. But I see it online. I travel for a living. So I see it in other stores. I see that logo more often than I did. Because, you know, I was a big, like, Warrior Nun Ariella fan. So, like, that timeline, I saw a lot of Antarctic Press, and then I feel like I didn't see it as much for a while, and then the last couple of years I've kind of, it's been very out there again.
Well, you know, the thing about the industry is they've never taken us seriously. You know, the thing about it is that we know that in order for us to maintain, you know, any type of relevance and survivability, you know, ours is not to just simply, you know, I can understand comic book wanting to be, you know, relevant or, you know, artistic, things like that, you know, but, you know, there's a quote from Farton Bink that you may not realize, but there's the guy who runs MGM says, if I hear the word artistic, that means I'm going to lose money.
Yeah.
You know, because the thing is about comics is we're an industry. You know, art is art. If you really wanted to do art, you do art for art's sake.
Yeah.
You know, but if you want to make money, okay, then you have to give people what they want. You know, you have to maintain a constant, and it's just like any other business. It's all about cash flow. It's all about maintaining your relevance. It's all about meeting your competition. You know, and that's what we've done with AP. We know when to retreat, we know when to attack, you know, we know when to lay low, you know, and we know when to rise up. It's just one of those things that I think a lot of comic book companies would be, could learn from, you know, in that aspect. You know, sometimes it's better just to keep your mouth shut, you know, and let people wonder, you know, and then open it and remove all doubt.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, are you able to, you know, I know selling like Warrior Nun was tough for you. Are you able to have any interaction with the character still, or is there any opportunity for you to work with the character still? I'm not sure who owned it or what the set.
Avatar Press currently owns the rights to the comic book version of Warrior Nun Ariella. I can continue to use characters from that universe. You know, because the rights were very specific to only Warrior Nun Ariella, you know, and that was it. So I could do a Warrior Nun character. I just can't call her Warrior Nun. Hmm. You know, that was the thing. And plus, I had a no compete contract clause for 5 years. Hmm. So, but that's expired a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, I just haven't had any real reason to want to bring back a Warrior Nun type character, you know, because I haven't come up with any kind of story that would you know, I have given it some thought, but you know, the thing is, I have so many other things in the fire right now. The last thing I need to do is to create another series, especially if there's one already out there.
Yeah,
you know, and there's no reason for me to actually, you know, unless I had a brilliant idea that would really, you know, make a name for itself. There's really no reason to want to bring it back.
That makes sense. Yeah. So, and then, I always ask comic book creators this also, because I'm fascinated by it. Is there ever like, is there a book out there that you haven't worked on that you would have that in your career that you would love the opportunity to?
I would love to try my hand at the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh wow, that seems like a good fit.
Something really fun to do, you know. I did the Marvel manga, so
yeah,
I had a chance to do almost every single major Marvel character, so I fulfilled that need, you know. I've only done one story for DC, and that was a short story involving the Green Lantern, mm-hmm. you know. I would love the opportunity to be able to do my version of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, it would be pretty wild.
Yeah, yeah. I assume that's probably harder with, you know, Nickelodeon involved now instead of like when it was more independently.
Well, apparently it's not as hard as you might think. Apparently, one of the owners, I think it's Peter Lehrer, he is still allowed to do his own Turtles project, you know, every year.
Oh, okay.
You know? Yeah, that's my understanding.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I think we keep seeing, you know, the unusual projects, you know, from him. And that's why I see crossovers every once in a while with the Turtles, with other, you know, independent comic book creators. So I think he has something to do with that. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, then there's some opportunity there. Hopefully you see it. That seems like an easy.
I'm working on it.
I'll keep an eye out then. Well, Ben, tell us what else, you know, you have coming up, what we can expect from Antarctic Press on the horizon here and moving forward.
All right. Well, let's see. I'm working on a new character, you know, called Kendra. You know, here's the cover.
I've seen that. I recently ordered number 3.
That's my new passion right now. It's sort of a tongue-in-cheek, funny fun adventure. You know, set in a Sword and Sorcery universe, where in this universe, the conceit is that this fantasy world was invaded by aliens, you know, and they fought a war. And, you know, it's like 1,000 years after that war ended, and they're still finding remnants of alien technology in this Sword and Sorcery world.
Okay.
You know, things like that. Sort of like a more fun version of Thundar, the barbarian.
Yeah.
You know? And of course, I'm working on Ninja High School. I just finished issue 199. I'm on my way to number 200, you know, and then on to 201 and further. And I have a lot of, I'm working on Tomorrow Girl, lots of crossovers with that. I'm doing a Ninja High School Cerebus crossover.
Oh, nice.
I'm working on a Tomorrow Girl meets Zen, Intergalactic Ninja.
Yeah.
I'm working on several Tomorrow Girl has been sort of like my genesis of a superhero universe, you know, in a roundabout way.
Yeah.
You know, trying to create a superhero universe by using, you know, indie creators to help build the universe.
Yeah, smart. Hey, I mean, get, you know, there are people out there that want to do it. So,
absolutely.
And that's like, I mean, I know Antarctic Press has done some superhero stuff in the past. You know, I think Tomorrow Man way back in the day. But being able to bring that forward and have like a diverse portfolio for the imprint is great.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and we are trying to also branch into other media. Like video games, animation, YouTube is definitely a possibility for creating new content. You know, we're creating a new Antarctic Press app so that we can upload 40 years of comic books,
wow.
You know, there so that people can read, you know, past AP projects, you know, that may have never been exposed to them before. You know, so yeah, we are moving forward despite what's going on with the direct market, because we know that there are opportunities out there, you know, if we can just take advantage of them. You know, of course, we want to see a healthy direct market, but in case it all goes flat,
yeah,
you know, we have backup plans just in case.
Yeah. And I mean, even if it's, you know, even if the direct market still goes well, you can, like you said earlier, you can do both.
So yeah, a healthy direct market benefits everyone.
100%. So great. Well, Ben, tell everyone where they can find you, find Antarctic Press, any Kickstarters, anything like that, to follow, etc.
Okay, well, you can find Antarctic Press at antarcticpress.com. You can also follow me on bendunncomics.com. And I do have a YouTube channel, you know, and if you want to just check it out, that's fine. You know, I don't post very often because, you know, I just don't have the time. Yeah. But but I do occasionally post there. And you can find me on all the social media sites, X, you know, Instagram, Facebook, everything else. So I'm not hard to find.
All right. Perfect. All right. Well, we are going to get out of here for the day, guys. We appreciate you hanging out. Again, you can find me at Bourbon and Branch tonight doing stand-up comedy, and tomorrow night at Flower and Flower in Leon Valley in the San Antonio area. And again, go to Inferno.Earth on Instagram and our website to find Killstand number 2 now available. And that's it, guys. Make sure to follow Ben, Antarctic Press, and all the stuff they're doing. They create some really, really awesome stuff. And 40 years, and here's to another 40 more. So,
hope not.
Well, not for you, but for someone. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. And for the Social Hour, I've been Deese. And for Ben, thanks. And we will see you all next week.